Hey guys, welcome to Unpopular Opinions with Nick. On this podcast, we will be discussing all things culture, politics, lifestyle, and current events. Come along for the ride. Hello everyone, and welcome to the Unpopular Opinions podcast. I am Nick, your host, and today we are going to be kicking off the podcast with a bombshell. Fauci fraud and all things related to Fauci. So I'm sure you guys have heard by now, recently there's been a large dump of emails from Dr. Fauci spanning from January all the way through about middle of May or June that BuzzFeed and Washington Post got through an FOIA request. So for those of you who aren't familiar, an FOIA request, it's a Freedom of Information Act. And this allows people to petition the government for public information. So then the government would then take the request into account, redact anything that, you know, is potentially harmful for public or for national security or for their employees. So things like email addresses have been redacted. And then they distribute that to the public for consumption. This is really important because it allows our journalists to actually be journalists, which has been happening less and less these days, which we'll get into here in a little bit, talking about the media coverage coming out from these emails. But it allows normal citizens and journalists to get information that would otherwise not be available unless the government hands it over. So a couple quick takes for today, a couple quick things from the headlines. China has had their first bird flu case. This was reported on dailywire.com, and China, of course, just like with COVID, has downplayed the first human case of H10N3 bird flu. They say the risk of a large-scale spread is low. However, I trust China and the Chinese Communist Party about as much as I trust gas station sushi or a drink from Bill Cosby. So hopefully the current administration will keep an eye on this, you know, shut down travel from China, basically pull a Taiwan. Taiwan, you know, they didn't get hit very hard from COVID because they've been burned by China before with the original SARS virus, SARS-CoV-2. So China knows, or Taiwan knows, that China basically lies about everything and is not forthcoming with evidence. So hopefully we've learned our lesson there with this current COVID-19 pandemic. Next, we have Andy Ngo, attacked by Antifa. He's a reporter who has recently been boycotted because his book paints Antifa in a negative light. He's been in Portland doing some reporting on the riots that are currently going on, and he was attacked, and Antifa tried to kill him. And finally, this one actually kind of makes me smile. Iran's largest naval warship sinks, not due to any attacks, but due to a fire. So anytime a global competitor and enemy of the United States has something bad happen to the military, I'm not going to be too upset about it. Iran's the biggest state sponsor of terrorism. They absolutely hate the United States. They fuel a lot of the unrest in the Gaza Strip. They fund Hamas. Really nothing good to say really about Iran. So their largest naval ship is sunk. Yay. All right. Moving on now to the juicy story of the day. Dr. Fauci and his emails from the pandemic. So there's a lot of information that came out from this. It's like 3,000 pages that BuzzFeed got. I think Washington Post got about 840 pages. Lots to dig through. I've spent probably 5 or 6 hours just digging through them, trying to get to the highlights for you guys. Some of his emails, you know, end of long changes, and he just doesn't really say much. He says noted or we'll discuss soon. But there are some emails that are particularly juicy that show Fauci knew a lot more than he was leading on, and he had opinions that he was doing the complete opposite of during the pandemic. So his emails said one thing, whereas at the same time he would tell the public to do something else. So it's kind of another instance of that rules for thee, not for me, that you tend to see from the liberal establishment. And Fauci, you know, originally when he came out, I thought, you know, he's served, what, 5, 6, 7 presidents. Dude's 80 years old. And so, you know, maybe he's actually decent at his job. Turns out he's not. He's absolutely terrible at his job, but he's the highest paid politician in the government right now. I think his salary's somewhere above the president's. I've heard as high as 800,000 a year. I've also heard as low as about 480. So I don't really care what he gets paid. Honestly, in my opinion, it's too much. He's cost the American people about a year and a half of their lives from his misguided and frankly wrong policy in regards to COVID. So, but getting into these emails, we will notice that media coverage has been kind of split. So conservative outlets rightly are calling out Anthony Fauci for all of his basically doublespeak and naivete. Nah, that's not even the right word. Mostly his hypocrisy, yeah. On COVID, his secretiveness, not being upfront with the American people, all to further a narrative, and potentially, I mean, this would be more conspiratorial, but like potentially to damage the Trump administration while working with other actors outside the government who tend to be more friendly to a, I'm going to say leftist ideology. So there's emails with, you know, Disney wanting to get an exclusive behind the scenes biopic for Fauci. Facebook reached out to Fauci about creating a COVID resource that has a whole bunch of things regarding the virus and kind of laid the groundwork for all of the heavy blatant censorship that they were going to be doing for COVID-19. So if anyone likes those COVID-19 banners from Facebook, you can thank Fauci for those. Anytime you mention COVID-19, God forbid, you have to throw a disclaimer on it. Even if you say, hey, I got my COVID-19 vaccine, you've got the disclaimer. And this was as early as February. So, like I said, conservative media has rightly been ripping Fauci a new one. However, the leftist media, which is at this point the Democratic media wing, they honestly have stopped being journalists for the most part. I would say 95% of national media is just, you know, Democratic talking heads. So here's one of the headlines from CNN. It says, thousands of emails from and to Fauci during the pandemic's early days were published. Here's what they show about him. This entire article is nothing but a puff piece. You know, it says, oh, he wasn't sleeping and he was being overly dedicated, sometimes responding to messages at 2 a.m. At one point, they say he only saw his wife for 45 minutes over a 10-day period, which, again, I'm not doubting that. And no doubt he probably was pulling long hours, working hard, but these are not the relevant facts that have come out of this email dump. The important things are not the humanistic perspective of Dr. Anthony Fauci. The important things from these emails are, what did he know about COVID? When did he know it? And what was he doing privately that was contradicting what he was telling the American people to do publicly? None of this gets hit on in the CNN article. Of course, CNN might as well just put, you know, Democratic media outlet on top of their screen, as far as I'm concerned. They try and act like they're objective journalists, but anyone with two brain cells to rub together knows that the furthest thing from objective, bordering, very frequently peddling in false information, fake news, and fake news stories, which is why, of course, they got termed fake news by President Donald Trump. in a later episode, we'll go through some of the fake stories that CNN has reported on, and then they fail to either retract or update. And of course, when they do, it's never the big fanfare that you see when the original story came out, the bombshell stories. Once it gets debunked, you know, it's always, you know, page 12 retraction. So CNN, of course, doing everything they can to cover up for Dr. Fauci, pretty much to be expected. It was frankly nauseating to read because journalism at CNN is dead. It's all partisan spin. BuzzFeed, which I'm actually surprised that BuzzFeed filed the original FOIA request to get these emails. However, they did the same thing. It doesn't get to really any of the important issues at hand from these emails. It still focuses more on, you know, feelings and having empathy for Dr. Fauci, you know, the pressure that fell on one man. Well, here's the thing. It didn't all fall on one man. Anyone who's leading an organization has to be able to delegate to their team. And yes, I'm not saying that he didn't work hard. I'm not saying that he wasn't being very dedicated in his work. But when you get into public office, when you are the director, the leader of an entire organization, you have to expect these things. So maybe it's not the cush job he was wanting or expecting, but I honestly don't have any sympathy for him, especially after reading what has come through in these emails. So the headline here from BuzzFeed, Anthony Fauci's emails reveal the pressure that fell on one man. And then the subheader is thousands of pages of communications obtained by BuzzFeed News show how Fauci tried to keep Americans calm and develop an effective strategy despite conflicts with the Trump administration. Now, this right here is blatantly partisan. Of course, the president is going to have different priorities than the head of the NIH or the National Institute for Allergies and Infectious Diseases. NIAID, I think is the actual acronym. So while Dr. Fauci's main concern is public health, the president has to think about the country as a whole. It can't be just, oh, how do we keep the most people from getting sick? Because if you wanted to do that, then all you do is you lock everyone in their houses by military order. No one leaves except for people who are mandated by the government, and everyone gets all of their necessities delivered to them, and life as you know it ceases to exist, right? NIT, it's saying, hey, the only way to have a secure network is to unplug all the computers. Whenever people are going to go out and be in the world, there's going to be some level of risk associated with it. And as a president, you have to mitigate and balance the trade-offs between these different policies and risks. So of course, Fauci and Trump are going to have some differing opinions and some clashes. He wouldn't be a good leader if they didn't. Anyone who just says, oh yeah, the scientists know the best for everything, then they're not actually critically thinking, and they're just being a sheep led by the so-called experts. And again, the longer this pandemic has gone on, the more and more I have questioned Fauci's expertise in the realm of public health and virology. Going down through this BuzzFeed article, at one point it does show, it actually spotlights an email from Mark Zuckerberg to Anthony Fauci. And it says the following. It says, I wanted to send a note of thanks for your leadership and everything you're doing to make our country's response to this outbreak as effective as possible. I also wanted to share a few ideas of ways we could help you get your message out, but I understand you're incredibly busy, so don't feel a need to reply unless these seem interesting. And so at this point, Facebook, it's March 15th, the day they announced 15 days to slow the spread. And Facebook said, this isn't public yet, but we're building a coronavirus information hub that we're going to put at the top of Facebook for everyone, 200 plus million Americans, 2.5 billion people worldwide, with two goals. Make sure people can get authoritative information, which who are going to be quote unquote your authoritative sources? Is it going to be PolitiFact that Facebook basically owns via a subsidiary? But people can get authoritative information from reliable sources, and two, encourage people to practice social distance and give people ideas for doing this using internet tools. This will be live within the next 48 hours. So Facebook was already being very, very aggressive in forwarding whatever information they wanted to push about COVID-19. And they're just asking Dr. Fauci for his blessing at this point. They then ask him if he can include a video in the form of a Q&A. They're planning on doing a series of live stream Q&As. Fauci responds to Zuckerberg and says that he will write or call Mark and tell him that he's interested. So he clearly gave Facebook his seal of approval to let Facebook be judge, jury, and executioner of all COVID information on their platform, whether it's accurate or not. And it's caused a lot of people to be deplatformed and banned for what Facebook calls misinformation, but now 15, 16 months after the fact, we have found out that those people were actually right about things like hydroxychloroquine, remdesivir, how, you know, what treatments work, what treatments don't. And again, we can all go back through this. If there's interest in it, I can, we can go even more in depth about the actual COVID timeline and see the hypocrisies there. But that might be a little out of scope for this specific one, since we're going just through the Fauci emails. So I was actually surprised BuzzFeed showed that, but it does show their hand and why Facebook has been so heavy-handed with all of their COVID policies. Next, we have an email from... asking about wearing face masks while flying or traveling domestically. So for full context, this was early in the pandemic, but Fauci says here, and this was at the time consistent with what he was saying about face masks before face masks became the official virtue signal and most pointless mediation method for this pandemic, when Fauci actually was showing, like, was actually following the science. He says in his email, "Masks are really for infected people to prevent them from spreading infection to people who are not infected, rather than protecting uninfected people from acquiring infection." Fauci wrote, "The typical mask you buy in the drugstore is not really effective in keeping out the virus, which is small enough to pass through the material. It might, however, provide some slight benefit in keeping out gross droplets if someone coughs or sneezes on you. I do not recommend that you wear a mask, particularly since you're going to a very low-risk location." So this proves that through the entire pandemic, masks have been completely pointless. They do not work, okay? Every single place where it says, oh, face covering required, and those stupid little cotton masks with whatever designs you want on them, or whatever freaking mask up indie, whatever slogan you have, I mean, even the Black Lives Matter ones, they don't do anything. They do absolutely nothing because the virus is so small that it will pass through it. And we know now at this point that it's also an airborne virus. So the masks, as we thought at the beginning, are completely pointless. So all of these mask mandates, federally, locally, on airplanes, everywhere, are completely pointless. Do not mitigate the spread of COVID-19 one bit. This is all about government control and virtue signaling. Completely. All right, moving on. Washington Post. Titled, "Anthony Fauci's Pandemic Emails. All is well, despite some crazy people in this world. So this is the Washington Post's headline, and then they quote an email from Anthony Fauci. Further down in this article, Washington Post says, Fauci was struggling to bring coherence to the Trump administration's chaotic response to the virus, and President Donald Trump was seeking to minimize its severity. So I have a couple, actually I have more than a couple, I have a lot of issues with this whole entire article, but also this specific statement in, right here. Trump's response to COVID-19 was praised by numerous governors, Cuomo, Newsom, New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy, and New Mexico Governor Michelle. I can't remember her name right now, but Michelle something or other. I'll put it in the notes. It was so well received by the governors during this election year, 2020 we're talking about now, Donald Trump cut an election ad with all these governors, Democratic governors, by the way, praising Trump's response. Just saying. I mean, sounds like the Washington Post is making a blatant lie here. Additionally, if we want to talk about Donald Trump's COVID successes, he procured a vaccine in record time with Operation Warp Speed, which would have been delivered before the election had it not been for political influences and political motivations from the drug companies, which I'm sure the drug companies are regretting that now, since Biden is discussing waiving their patent on the COVID-19 vaccine so that the whole world can get it. So I hope Pfizer, Moderna, all, you know, Johnson & Johnson, I hope they're happy with losing their entire investment to generic vaccines that are going to be made because Joe Biden wants to, I don't know, destroy the entire United States economy. Next, Trump also, he ramped up testing faster than any other country in the world. And I know you're going to say, oh, well, it wasn't really that fast and we were always falling short because blah, 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 blah. Most of those metrics were based on tests per million. And outside of China and India, we are one of the biggest countries. So by April 6th, we were doing more tests per day total than any other country in the world. It came out to about 5,500-ish tests per million. The highest was Saudi Arabia at 22,000 tests per million. But we were doing 1.7 million tests per day. 1.7 million tests per day. No other country even came close in the top eight. None. This is all lying with statistics simply for a political narrative. Anyway, that's a bit of a tangent. Back to the emails. So one of the main things, there's two big things we noticed from these emails that Dr. Fauci had to release. One, the lab leak theory. And the fact that this virus is not naturally occurring in nature at all. That's the first. Second, the COVID missteps. So let's start with the lab leak. Early February, I think it was February 1st or 2nd, he sent an article. He was conversing with Christian G. Anderson about the lab leak theory, and he sent an article called Mining Coronavirus Genomes for Clues to the Outbreak's Origins to Christian Anderson to try and debunk this lab leak theory that was popping up. Christian Anderson replied to this email, warned Fauci, explicitly warned him of potential genetic engineering, and the article that Fauci sent to Christian Anderson, he was quoted. Christian Anderson was quoted in the article that Fauci sent. right? Like, does that make any sense? Clearly, he did not read this article. If he had, he wouldn't have sent it in such a nonchalant way to somebody who was quoted in it. Like, imagine this. Imagine you're talking, you know, with your friend, and it's like, hey, man, you know, check out this article that I just found online. And your friend goes, yeah, I wrote it. Yeah, you might be stupid if you do something like that. Well, that's exactly what Dr. Fauci did. But in the response, Christian Anderson replies, he said, on a phylogenetic tree, the virus looks totally normal, and the close clustering with bats suggests that bats serve as the reservoir. So to kind of put this together, think about the tree sort of like a file tree on your computer. And each variant has its own subsection. So that's what the tree is. So in this tree, it's saying, hey, you know, the bat, it looks like it was here at the bats, and then it broke off into its own subsection. But this is where it gets interesting. The very next sentence. The unusual features of the virus make up a really small part of the genome, less than 0.1%. So one has to look really closely at all the sequences to see that some of the features potentially look engineered. Christian goes on in this email to say, Eddie, Bob, Mike, and myself all find the genome inconsistent with expectations from evolutionary theory. That's huge. We don't have any more than that because Fauci responded with, I think he said they were going to hop on a call in the morning. But seems like a red flag to me. Especially when he goes out on the news and says there's no validity to the lab leak theory. Says with certainty, he says there's no evidence that this was a man-made virus. None? Zero? Are you serious? Like, this is a blatant lie to the American people who deserve to know if a Chinese lab, whether intentionally or unintentionally, leaked a virus that they were working on via gain of function research, which we'll get to that here in just a minute. Welcome back to Unpopular Opinions with Nick. When we left off, we were talking about gain of function research and the downplaying of the lab leak theory from Anthony Fauci. So for anyone who's not familiar with gain of function, it's where researchers will take either a non-harmful virus and try to make it harmful, or they will take a virus that is non-harmful to humans, can't infect humans, and try to increase its infectivity in humans and essentially add a function to this virus, hence the name. Now, the advocates for this say, oh, it's important that we do gain of function so we can understand how to fight these viruses if they ever do make the jump, yada, yada, yada. A lot of people believe gain of function research is meant for the creation of bioweapons. That's potentially what could have been happening here as well. There's a lot of murky waters around it. Personally, I don't think we need to be making viruses more deadly than they already are. We already can't see them. They're already incredibly hard to contain, as evidenced by this past year and a half. All research on viruses should be how to effectively treat them, not how to make them more deadly, in my personal opinion. But there are emails that suggest and other evidence that has since been uncovered by Rand Paul that grant money from Anthony Fauci's organization, the NIH, was used in the Wuhan Institute for gain-of-function research. The researcher in a scholarly paper actually gives Anthony Fauci credit for the research that's being done and explicitly uses the grant 10-digit grant number that was used for this research when it was not supposed to be used for gain of function. Now, this is the thing. Money is fungible. If someone, you know, you get, let's say you give money to a homeless person, right? And they say it's for a Big Mac. Well, they run off and you don't know if they bought a Big Mac. Then you come back, you see them the next day, and you say, hey, how was that Big Mac? They go, oh, yeah, it was great. Well, Big Mac might have been a bottle of vodka, right? You don't know what they're using it for. As soon as they get the money on their hands, they can do whatever they want with it. So when it comes to the Chinese, who, again, I don't trust the Chinese Communist Party, which runs the Wuhan Institute for Virology, by the way. Don't trust them at all. So we have that, which I think is kind of a smoking gun. But also there were two emails in there with attachments titled Barrick Shi et al. Dash Nature Medicine dash SARS gain of function dot PDF. And this is interesting because all the other emails that I had seen, and I've only maybe scratched the surface, right? The attachments always show up as separate pages. These emails have no attachments anywhere near them. They're just missing. Completely gone. And one of these emails is to Hugh Auchincloss of the NIH and NIAID. Anthony Fauci says, Hugh, it's essential that we speak this AM. Keep your cell phone on. I have a conference call at 7:45 a.m. with Azar. It will likely be over at 8:45 a.m. Read this paper as well as the email that I will forward to you now. You'll have tasks today that must be done. Thanks, Tony. I don't know about you, but that sounds pretty shady. Like, exceptionally shady. Especially the fact that because the government gets to redact these emails, could they have removed that PDF to cover Dr. Fauci? Maybe. Lots of stuff doesn't add up. Additionally, going into the lab leak theory, where they were, in my opinion, more than likely doing gain-of-function research, a WHO researcher associated with the Wuhan lab, Peter Daszak, D-A-S-Z-A-K, he actually thanked Dr. Fauci in an email for coming out against the lab leak theory and saying it had no merits. Kind of suspicious. Also, Peter Daszak also has in the past been a huge proponent of gain-of-function research, as has Anthony Fauci. In a 2017 article that Anthony Fauci wrote, I think it was 2017, he was advocating for gain-of-function research. Just, you know, let's put the pieces together. All right. And finally, the other another big takeaway. Now, granted, there's a lot more to come these days, and I hope that I'm, you know, giving you the facts you need to make informed decisions about what's going on. Because people in the legacy media, Washington Post, BuzzFeed, which just it's such a terrible organization, CNN, MSNBC, they're not doing their job anymore. They're not giving you the information. So I'm hoping that these facts, the important emails, the stuff you should be paying attention to, I'm hoping that this gives you more of an idea of what's going on. Keep your head on a swivel. You know, look, check out other sources outside of the authoritative fact checkers. Other sites, you know, have a lot of good information. Blaze Media, run by Glenn Beck, Louder with Crowder, Daily Wire, and great places you can see, you know, another conservative take. And also, you know, take what they say, go cross-reference it with these other articles, and then do your own research. everything that I've talked about, I went and I actually found the emails, and, you know, in bringing these facts to you. So I know it's a lot of, it takes a lot of time. It's, pretty intensive, but I feel like it needs to be done, and I'm hoping that I can, you know, help you guys. So the next big takeaway that I see from these emails are the COVID missteps. So there was an email to Dr. Fauci from Gerald Glockenstein. He is a economist from Austria. Came in on May 5th. So this is now, what, 2 months, I think? Yeah, almost 2 months after 15 days to slow the spread, right? And then we got locked into our houses for about 3 months straight. So Gerald Glockenstein says, and it sounds somewhat mocking. And he says, "Dear highly respected Dr. Fauci." And he proceeds later in the email to call Fauci F-A-U-X-I. Because he's clearly not a fan of what's been going on in the U.S. He says he's sickened to see what's been going on the past 4 months. And he used some of his expertise as an economist to do some statistical data analysis on COVID-19. Now, I know what you guys might be thinking. Oh, well, he's not a virologist, immunologist, yada, yada, yada. How can he know what's going on? Whatever. Well, let's also remember that the main study used for all of these policies to scare everyone came out of Imperial College in London, and they said 2 million people in the U.S. are going to die before the end of 2020. Get out of here. Like, it wasn't even close. Wasn't even close. So just because someone's a doctor doesn't mean they understand how to analyze data and statistics. I can't get into the actual data because the emails that got sent over the graphs were too grainy to read the data. But here were the main takeaways. Again, May 5th. Okay, May 5th. The virus, COVID-19, it's a true threat to humans older than 65 years old with pre-existing conditions. However, COVID-19 is influenza-like to humans older than 65 with no pre-existing conditions, or to humans who are younger than 65. So with this, Mr. Glockenstein proposed a strategy. Three steps. One, keep the virus 100% away from people older than 60 with pre-existing conditions. Sounds pretty simple, right? Two, minimize possible contact with the virus from people older than 60 who do not have pre-existing conditions. So, sounds more like a, I don't know, either a conditional lockdown or giving people choice. You know, hey, if you're older than 60, stay home. Don't go anywhere. Instead of locking everyone in their house for 3 months straight and causing businesses to collapse and our economy to shutter. And then step three, after steps one and two were completed, step three was treat the remaining population as you would during a flu season. Weird. Flu season. That's about what COVID has been like. If you take away all of the nursing home deaths, all of the deaths due to poor public policy from Michigan and New York and New Jersey, the deaths from this are about like a flu season, which technically runs from about fall to early spring. And then, you know, it dies off in the summer. However, the COVID counter, they're still counting literally from pandemic day one instead of cyclical. If we were to look at this as a COVID season, it looks like a bad flu, like a really, really bad flu. So a couple other COVID missteps. Lockdowns don't work. This is from the WHO. The lockdowns also caused more mental health issues among all population groups. Children, adults, men, women, you name it. One example is in San Francisco during the pandemic, they had more suicides in San Francisco than they had COVID deaths. What? I think I'd rather take my risk with COVID if it's going to cause people to be so depressed that they're killing themselves. Depriving someone of basically freedom for months, like they did in California with Governor freaking Newsom, who's just awful. More suicides than COVID deaths in San Francisco. Just let that set. And again, as Dr. Fauci admitted in his earlier emails, masks are ineffective. He said the typical masks you buy in the drugstore is not really effective in keeping out the virus, which is small enough to pass through the material. So all of this has been, all of these measures, for the most part, have been completely wrong and misguided. They have been nothing but virtue signaling and a way to further divide the country. And now that we're seeing all of the lies coming out, do we think anyone's going to run out and try to get the vaccine when they're pushing so hard? What are they not telling us about the vaccine? And I'm not saying the vaccines are ineffective. I have family members who have gotten it. I have friends who have gotten it who are high risk. Thankfully, none of them have had bad side effects, but there are side effects to these vaccines and you can find them. They're online. They're in a national database. And, you know, people get hospitalized. People have died from the vaccine. I think it's 14,000 last I checked. It just makes you think. So now, because we cannot trust anything coming out of our media or really our government, where do we go from here? How do we restore faith in our institutions? How do we get bureaucrats away from power? Because bureaucrats aren't elected. They're appointed. Dr. Fauci shouldn't be making policies. And they shouldn't be mandated by executive order either. The way I remember the Constitution was written. I don't remember the way the Constitution was written, but the writing of the Constitution, last I read it, and it hasn't been amended, is Congress makes the laws. Congress has to vote on the laws. President has to execute the laws. And then the judicial makes sure they're constitutional. Something to think about. A couple more COVID-related things before we go right after this. All right. Hopefully everyone's made it through the whole podcast by now. And, you know, this is my first one. So thank you guys for sticking with me. This last segment's going to be a little shorter. I just wanted to send you off with a couple of resources that provide some good information about COVID that kind of back up, you know, a lot of what these Fauci emails are finally bringing to light. So I don't know if you guys have heard of medium.com, but there's a channel, or I guess a publication, called Analytica Perspectica, Analytica space Perspectica. So it's written by a guy named Josh Ketter, who I actually used to work for Amazon and was head of their data science and data analytics. And he's got four articles in there. They're all about COVID-19. So they can be pretty long. He also has some pretty good breakdowns of them. So the first one is, you know, it was June 3rd, 2020. So we were, 3 months, 4 months into the pandemic. And it's called COVID-19, What the Data Tells Us. Punchline here, we got it wrong and we're tracking it wrong. You know, this is stuff that the mainstream media wouldn't tell you, but it's true. They were absolutely tracking COVID completely incorrectly. Everything seemed to be a COVID death. Suicide? Oh, posthumously tested positive for COVID? COVID. Motorcycle accident? Tested positive for COVID? COVID. You know, just not really tracking correctly, because there was an incentive for these hospitals to get as many COVID patients as they could for funding. So, I mean, the government in this point created a bad incentive to misrepresent the data, right? So that's always going to make it harder for us to make informed decisions. So that's the first one. His next article is COVID-19, What the Data Tells Us in Detail. It's a more in-depth article, and it expands upon his first article. So it talks about the forecasts being wrong, the expectations being wrong, everything wrong about it in a very much more math and science-y way. So anyone who's interested in that, great resource. And then the last two, COVID, What the Data Tells Us About Texas. This was published in July when Texas was still pretty open. And, you know, everyone in the media was saying, oh, Texas is gonna collapse and is having issues and yada, yada, yada. And they're the worst. The actual numbers coming out of Texas didn't match the narrative. And that's what his third article states. At time of writing, most Texas hospitals were below normal capacity, and they had one of the lowest fatality rates and flattest curves in the nation. Even though you would think more people would be inside, it's middle of summer, and they would have higher transmission. So that's another good one. And I'll have a link to this and all of my sources in the description here. And then the final article that this guy, Josh Ketter, wrote, and it's probably the best one. It was September 13th, 2020, when we all thought we were rounding the corner right before the next big spike. And honestly, we had things been managed differently, we probably could have avoided the second spike, in my personal opinion. But his last one is Top 5 Misleading COVID Reports. And in it, he goes through basically how the media is playing up on people's fear by lying about COVID with statistics. This is supported by, you know, some of the Project Veritas research that's been going on recently, where they've got CNN executives on tape saying, God, if more people could die of COVID, that would make our ratings even better. Yeah, this is the media that says they're objective journalists, but they have a COVID tracker plastered to the side of their coverage because they want to play up the fear porn, if I'm being blunt about it. It's pretty disgusting. So the top five ways people are lying, to summarize it: false scale, cumulative versus linear graphs that start at zero, case data, you can't use it to trend, growth rates, the error of omission, and false comparison, so manipulating the scales of COVID, and also no comparison, so just a big number with no context and no adjustments. He goes into all five of these and explains why they're false and misleading. And I think it'll be enlightening for you guys to take a look through, and, you know, message me through the podcast, you know, leave comments, and see if this would be something you guys would like to hear me talk about in a future episode. We can go through more in depth some of these things moving forward. Like I said, this podcast is about more than just politics. It's about current events, culture, things of that nature. So I'll go ahead and put these links in the description. I thank you guys so much for listening. Really appreciate it. And I hope you're looking forward to the next episode. Have a good one.